This is a partial recording of the February 1st, 2018 class. So sorry about that. Anyway, you were about to say, I interrupted you briefly.
The term agency covers all the organizations that would help the president execute.
So anything that helps the president execute a law is an agency? That would include a military battalion, for example.
Do what?
A military battalion would be an agency.
Well, no. Well, it says it covers things like offices, departments, bureaus, commissions.
No, no, you're getting there. Okay.
That would exclude battalions because the president appoints the head of the battalion. Doesn't appoint the postman down the street.
So it has to be appointed by the president, though. So any federal group whose appointment comes from, say, for example, the judiciary would not be an agency. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I mean, there's more additions to that. Like, they have to be confirmed by the Senate, and they're in an administrative capacity, so it wouldn't be the judicial system, but they do have their own judges. So, I mean, they have some, they help work out the implementation of statutory stuff.
Sure, absolutely. So, and I've jumped in on you. I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, so, but for example, then the General Accounting Office is not an agency. It's appointed and managed by Congress.
Well, it'd be a congressional agency.
But I just asked, what's an agency?
Well, that's why it's a debatable term, I guess.
All right, I'll let you get away with that one. Yes, Oscar?
Oftentimes, the appointments have authority to appoint for sections of their agencies. So maybe you could say this, since the Department of Defense is headed by the presidential appointee, well, you have someone that's confirmed by the Senate, appointed by the president, that anyone who is in charge of that battalion could in fact be another extension of the same agency, and thus that battalion could be an agency.
That's an interesting argument. And I am not arguing that a military battalion charging Capitol Hill is an agency. But I wanted to just essentially highlight for you, and you guys started on the right place. This is a fairly nebulous concept, isn't it? So I want you to be flexible. A couple of thoughts. First of all, just think of three entities that you would consider to be an agency. Just offhand, name three.
IRS.
Sorry, what?
The IRS.
The IRS. Oh, I shouldn't say that. For those who want to do tax law, it is a beautiful and subtle field of law. Professor Wells is a spectacular professor. I highly recommend it. But the IRS strikes fear into my heart right about now for some reason. Yes.
The EPA is called an agency.
The EPA? Yeah, okay. Be careful. You're straying into my pet area, so I'll control myself. SEC. Now that's interesting. Why the SEC?
The FCC.
The FCC or yes. SEC?
No.
Or both of them?
I guess.
Yeah.
I would say the FCC.
The FCC. Why the FCC? No, no. I just didn't know if that's where your heart calls you in this bar field of practice of law.
No.
You do, as that's where our deans feel. Okay. Just remember the FCC will actually come up later in the semester, time permitting. We're going to do George Carlin's Seven Dirty Words famous skit. I will not repeat it in class. I might play it. That would be fun. Yes, it would.
Health and Human Services.
Okay, absolutely. Notice commonalities. Every single agency you've listed are federal. Don't forget, you're going to hear me say it every day in this class, I suspect. Don't forget the states. You commit malpractice and you forget the states. States have their own administrative agency framework. It looks like the federal system, but it ain't necessarily the same, including how they appoint and how they serve. And frankly, the state agencies are bigger than the federal, if you put it all together. Number two, every single one of the areas you've talked about are large federal bureaucracies dominating a particular topic area. Their domain, their competence, their jurisdiction. They're not broad in terms of function. They tend to be specialists in areas where expertise matters. And I think last, and this is fair to say, for every single one of the agencies you talked about, even with the range of independence that was included in them, they all were headed by a person nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. And for now, I'll be honest, it's an ugly definition. It's a working definition. It's a messy definition. But for our purposes, that's enough to capture the concept for our discussion today. I will suggest to you as we get later in the semester, we do the administrative practice part of the class, there's actually a definition in the Administrative Procedure Act. And it carves out certain branches and agencies that you might think are agencies but are not under federal law. Save that for later. I feel like I'm always giving you these teasers for the last rest of the semester. Okay, so now we have a sense of what an agency is, where do they come from?
Congress creates agencies by statute.
So it must be a statute. You can have an agency without a statute, is that possible? I'm sorry.
Yeah?
Yeah? I didn't mean to step on your line. What were you gonna say?
Well, EPA was created by the next Congress. That's my point.
Ah, explain.
Well, not
everyone's an environmental walk like me, so.
EPA was created by the Nixon administration. After the passage of several different, like the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, it's just basically an agency whose original purpose was to execute those statutes, but it's not provided for in those.
So I'm curious, how did you know that? That usually wins me, you know, wins me beers in a bar bet. Just happen to know that?
Yeah.
Okay. Careful, you may be conscripted to the environmental army here before we're done. Yes, EPA, created by executive order. No act of Congress, at least initially. But I'm sorry, I'm in trouble here. I think it was actually legitimized by statute. The initial reorganization was by executive order, you're correct. But there was a comprehensive revamping of the entire security apparatus by Congress. Any others? Okay, but I don't mean to pick on you. You're absolutely correct. Almost all authority is statutory from the get-go. And even with EPA and its executive orders, it's stitched together like Frankenstein's monster existing agencies created by other statutes into a new administrative body. And ultimately, Congress statutorily endorsed that new agency. But nonetheless, there's a little bit of grayness at the edges, as always. But the key thing is, usually, an agency depends on the statute for its existence, and depends on the statute for its powers. And the agency attempts to go beyond those statutory grants of authority. You can challenge those acts as ultra-virus. Actually, I should ask, does anyone speak Latin in the classroom? I was going to ask, is it ultra-virus or ultra-virus? Sorry? Yes!
No, I don't speak Latin, but I
randomly
hear, randomly said it on a conference called
ultra-virus.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go with virus for the rest of the semester then. Either way, we'll get you through the courtroom. Just like I will say in Texas, though, it's never wadia, it's wadire. Okay, learn that one. I learned it the hard way. So, you've got to have a statute. There are important differences even with the statute. And this is from the book. What I'd like to do is go real quickly through them, because what I really want to talk about is what's in the front pages today. Key things about agencies beyond the fact that they are usually for our class, we're going to talk about federal executive instrumentalities that are authorized by statute typically,
that are usually headed by person nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. They also come in different flavors. In particular, you can have what's called an executive agency, which is a creature of the president's will and subject to his or her beck and call, or independent, which we talked about a little bit already, and we'll talk about designing those kinds of institutions. In addition as well, within those agencies, there is a very clear demarcation between political level appointees and career staff. Career staff are protected by federal law. For those of you who are history buffs, look at the set. I'm blanking on the name right now. Who was the president who was shot by a frustrated office seeker? Is it Millard Filburn? Anyway, let's just simply say there's a long and interesting tangled history that led to the creation of the Civil Service Protection Acts. And as a result, you cannot fire career staff absent cause. That makes a huge difference between them and the people who come in to serve for 2 or 3 years in each administration. And how those two layers interact with each other is another important part we'll talk about in this class. I will simply note that I have friends who are actually flying to D.C. this week to take political appointments, and they're scared to death that they're about to sit across the table from someone with 30 years internal agency experience in a particular topic, and they have to figure out how to work with them even if that person disagrees, perhaps vehemently, with what they want to do. But that's a dynamic that's fairly common in federal agencies as well. Yes? Yes. For example, the very top layer is appointment subject to senatorial consent. Then you get down past deputies and associates. By assistant, usually you're able to just be appointed directly by Office of Personnel. It varies with each agency, though. Okay. Good question, though. Any others? All right. Before I dive into it, last question. How many of you are interested in working in a federal agency someday? Wow, some hands go up. But for the record, those of you listening to the audio tape, 4 out of a class of 75. Are the rest of you just withholding judgment or just waiting until this administration is done? All right, I'll stop. Okay. So now that we know what an agency is and we know where they come from and what the ground rules are, here's the question for today. If you're a president, how do you control your agency? What are the tools in your box? And here I have to say a heartfelt thank you and appreciation to President Donald Trump. He has made this class immeasurably more entertaining and timely now. He is the president who most has brought the ethos of "you're fired" to the White House. He is a firm believer in the power of hiring, firing as a method of control and exercising his will into the agency. So, with that in mind, firing can be in different shades. It can simply be not extending a service once it expires. Janet Yellen, if you talk with almost every economist, will say she did an exemplary job in a moment of crisis, who is viewed as nonpartisan, non-political, but nonetheless, because Donald Trump, and I say this without judgment, wants to make sure that he has someone that he has appointed in that chair. He exercised his right under the statute to name someone else. It can also be exercised in a more naked fashion. How many of you recognize her?
No.
Sally Yates. A little bit more?
She was the deputy AG.
And I'm sorry, you'll have to project a little bit. Pretend you're in a courtroom. A little bit. It's. You're absolutely right. That's Sally Yates. And you're right. She was deputy AG. But it gets more interesting at that point. Yes?
So I think she was acting attorney general at the start of the administration. And then when.
Because Eric Holder at that point has gone to California and was doing a redistricting.
That's right, yeah. And so when the
travel
ban. Wanting her to, or at least the DOJ, to defend it in the courts, and she basically
Absolutely. So, does that refresh everyone's recollection? Yes?
She was still there for the Obama administration, wasn't she?
She absolutely was. So, I will now ask the naked question to show your hands. How many of you think that that was the right action in that circumstance? Should she have been fired?
Like, politically speaking, or, like, what do you mean?
All right, you're asking me to clarify. Let me simply say, as a matter of law, as also a matter of agency implementation and administration, is that the right outcome? And I'm not trying to weasel out this. I'm asking you not to do it in party affiliation.
I mean, it was legal of him to do that. So.
But should he have, given what his role is in terms of controlling agencies?
What consideration? There was certainly a lot of political cost. Mm-hmm. He now appears to be getting something that he wants.
Okay. Now we're going
to get. Well, if he's acting as an executive and he tells his employees to do something and they don't do it, like they directly like disobey his order, then it seems like it's within his purview, like, to fire them, considering she was acting AG. He was going to get to appoint someone anyway.
Okay. So I'm hearing three layers there. One, it was within his power. Two, he was going to ultimately anyway, because he's a political appointee, and almost all political appointees are gone within a certain period of time. The third layer, I'm not sure I heard an answer to, which is, was it a desirable outcome in terms of running the agency, not in terms of the policy underlying this?
I don't know, like, in terms of morale for, like, the other employees, is that what you're talking about? Like,
well, I think, could you make the case that she was doing what she was supposed to do,
I think she was doing what she thought she was supposed to do. Yeah, I think she was following the letter of the law and she understood it. But I think she served in the pleasure of the president.
Yes, I'm doing a thought experiment in my head. Imagine instead of Sally Yates up here, it's Jeff Sessions. Imagine it's President Obama. Okay. I'm sorry. Did I see someone else's hand go up? Yes.
She actually politicized it. Because, like, I mean, theoretically speaking, if you don't agree with what the executive tells you to do, you just step down and say, I refuse. You kind of leave yourself a mark, right? You don't politically grandstand and say, well, I'm going to stay here, but I'm going to disobey your orders directly.
So you're saying he never should have had to fire. She should have said, exercise my duty to execute this order because it's unconstitutional. Therefore, I am stepping down.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's even politically better for her in the long run because she made herself out to be the martyr, right? So she takes the fall for what she believes, mm-hmm. and Trump looks terrible, but then she grandstanded and was fired.
Okay, but every single person, one more?
I think that undermines the idea of an agency serving its own function as opposed to just being a yes man for the president. Like, yeah, the president has the right to fire them if it sounds so important to them that they get it done, but at the heart of it, they're delegating this authority to these agencies that are supposed to be subject matter experts in doing what they believe is right and what needs to be done. I wouldn't put it past President Trump to go into any agency and say that he is the subject matter expert and knows what needs to be done.
So
I think it's within the purview of the head of the agency to say, no, this is my area of expertise, this is what I think needs to be done, and I'm not going to do this, and I'm not just going to stand down because you want me to. And then if the president comes back and says, no, this is something that I really need to happen, then it's within his right, obviously, to fire that head of the agency. Mm-hmm. But I think the agency has to act with some kind of autonomy, even if it's not independent.
Okay, so it's not grandstanding in your perspective. She was defending the integrity of the agency to which she was charged with protecting to some extent.
But then she was, I think it was political. I mean, she was obviously left over from the Obama administration and then the Trump administration coming in. So, I don't think that went without merits, but I think she was within her functionality as the AG.
Okay, so absolutely, but drawing everybody's perspectives together. I think we are maybe dissenting on to what extent her actions and the way she did it might have been justified outright, but we all agree the president should have been able to fire her. Yes?
I disagree a little bit, just in the historical sense that the Department of Justice has generally been seen as a more independent agency to kind of preserve like public trust in the Department of Justice, same with the FBI or intelligence. They've been seen as independent agencies that are kind of beyond like the political reasons of like how to long term preserve the trust in those agencies. So I think it's a bit different to treat the Department of Justice like the EPA or different executive agencies.
So if I'm just thinking out loud, so if we were to come up with the Kevin exception, it would be you can fire the Attorney General anytime you choose as president, unless that Attorney General is refusing an order based on grounds of constitutional magnitude. It's like a, or you have an out to not comply with military orders on grounds of conscience, meaning they violate the laws of war.
I feel like, yeah.
It would still be court martial.
Like the good cause exception, some fire exception.
Sorry.
Like the good cause exception, okay. Some fire exception, where it has to be more than just like simple disagreement.
All right, so we're starting to veer into where I was hoping we'd talk about, which is virtually everyone here says fire. Let me rephrase that. The president should be able to fire her because he should have that power to be able to run the agency. And you're suggesting there might be areas where perhaps he has to work with someone he doesn't want. He has an incapacity to fire them for structural or legislative reasons. So think about the magnitude of that call. Kevin's exactly right. We are talking about an enormously odd situation where basically you can't fire somebody even if they are directly refusing to do what you tell them to. That's an enormous step. But nonetheless, that is at the heart of what's happening right now on the front pages of our government. And just literally since yesterday, we've had a major DC Circuit decision on this exact topic, which I will hand out to you the first 5 pages. The opinion is 250 pages long. Not assigned reading. I put a link on the website for you if you're interested. But let me really give you something to sharpen your knives against. As we're talking about the cases that are coming up here, think in the back of your minds Robert Mueller. Here's the hypothetical I want you to test. Congress decides to pass a law saying the president cannot fire Robert Mueller or any other special prosecutor investigating the executive branch. Can Congress do that and be constitutional? And by the way, that's not a hypothetical. That exact legislation has been introduced multiple times in Congress already. It hasn't gotten traction for obvious reasons. But it might, especially if we start seeing genuine signs that Mueller is about to be fired. So, now I am going, I wish I had my swag left, but unfortunately I see Michael's hoarding it closely to his heart. I'm curious, who would like to just sort of throw out to me whether or not Congress can protect Mueller, and if so, we have a small number of cases today to talk about. I mean, we can talk about Myers, we can talk about Humphrey's executor. The one I really think you really want to know is the Olson case. That's the one you have the most material on hand. So with that in mind, in light of the enormous opt-out list for today, I am genuinely seeking a volunteer. Thank you.
The question you just asked about Congress being able to protect
Yes.
So what comes to my mind is how Congress is allowed to create the structure. That is one of their abilities when doing an agency. They're allowed to create the structure of the agency. And I feel like decisions on every part of that structure, including what to do with its members, would be able to be altered by statute. If you're allowed to structure an agency, I would think the employees and the hiring process and all that stuff is part of the structure of an organization.
I hear you, but if I was a cranky appellate judge, my question to you would be, that's very interesting, counsel. That's a wonderful policy argument. point me towards the law. Which case supports your proposition that this president is not constitutionally bound by an act of Congress that bars his or limits his capacity to fire the special prosecutor?
Wait, why shouldn't the president be bound?
No. The president is alleging that the Protect Mueller Act of 2018 is unconstitutional. You arguing that the act is constitutional?
Well, that argument would be for the Congress being, I haven't really chosen an opinion here, but I'm saying that argument would be that Congress is allowed to do it because they're allowed to create the structure of an agency. And the employment situations of its members, I would think, would just, just a plain thinking about it, that would be part of the structure of compensation.
Okay. So, of the cases, which one would support that proposition? And feel free to ask any of your co-counsel in the room. I delegated the power of appointment to you. Oh, you've already had a volunteer. It's co-counsel.
I just want to ask if you can talk about whether the firing is based on or executive.
That's an interesting question. I'm now going to ask you a question because, of course, I'm sadistic that way. Why is that relevant?
Well, that's what Humphrey's exception says. It's like if the agency head or whatever the agency trying to fire is doing a core executive function, then he has the power to make Congress can't.
So the president prevailed in Humphrey's executor because that was an agency which fell within a core executive function, where it was a purely executive agency.
I think I'm reading
something. No. I'm genuinely asking.
That was the argument that people submitted. But I think I'm reading it as in court of disagreement.
So Olson said Congress did have the power if it wanted to limit the power of the president's power. So let's put Olson over here. By the way, you'll see shortly, wow, the name Ted Olson. Fascinating man. A lot of constitutional history around him. We'll talk about in a second. So in Olson's decision, the Supreme Court upheld Congress's power to limit the capacity of the president to fire an independent prosecutor. They said it was constitutional to say the president's handcuffed.
As long as it's not the president's ability to perform his constitutional function.
So it's a function test. Core function. Is that what you're saying? As long as that impediment is not so significant that it limits the capacity of the president to be president, Congress is allowed to fiddle at the edges.
Yes. The court in Olson almost seems to say that what Congress did effectively didn't limit the president. Like they say that they can't sustain the position if it costs standards for people to lose the rules of executive authority. So it almost implies that it's not really a limitation on the president, which the Congress said that would be a limitation on the president would not be something to be upheld. So I think completely stripping the president of the authority to fire special counsel would be an imposition that the court would say unduly trammels on executive authority.
Okay.
Sure.
I would kind of disagree with that a little bit, and I would want to point to the function of the officer itself that Congress is examining. So if it's an inferior officer, then I would say that Congress would want to give that control to the president because it's more of an inferior officer. But if they hold their superior officer and they hold more of a quasi-legislative or what was it, quasi-judicial function, then the president shouldn't be able to have purview on what they do, because in some cases, as was the case with Nixon, Watergate, the president was doing wrong, and so they should be able to fire that officer, especially if they're
I promise I'll come to you in a second, but I want to extract a few things from Kyra's comment. So, inferior officer matters. So if it's not an inferior officer, Congress's powers to limit the president are not quite as important. Okay. And there is no impediment to the ability of the president to function, because in here I'm going to insert something, and maybe this is your comment too. Who can fire an independent prosecutor? It's buried in the case. Yes.
Attorney General.
Who can fire Robert Mueller?
Jeff.
I'm sorry? I heard someone say Jeff Sessions. I'd say normally, except Jeff Sessions is sitting in a windowless room somewhere as far as this case is concerned. Yes? Yep. Assuming he's not fired yet. Okay. Point being, it didn't impede the president's powers, because the president's surrogate in the Department of Attorney General could ultimately still fire this guy. And I'm sorry, was that going to be your comment too?
Yeah, that was really close to my what I was going to say.
Okay. Feel free to, is there anything you would add to it, or embroider, or keen perceptions, cutting observations?
Well, I feel, okay, so the Olson case really talks about the difference between inferior and not so inferior, individuals. And I feel like Robert Mueller would really be, the independent counsel is kind of this thing that got created that wasn't a part of any, like, it wasn't the head of any specific agency. It's just like this person that got created for a specific purpose. And so I can see that being an inferior officer, because this is, they're not like the head of any department or anything like that. So I feel like Robert Mueller would be not so much an inferior agent here.
Okay. So, I'm sorry, so he's not inferior? Because
I don't think he's inferior.
Well, that's interesting. He reports to other people, doesn't he? Where do people become inferior? Which is a terrible way to ask that question.
It's hard to answer. I just feel like the head of the FBI, that's a major department, major executive department, administrative, and I don't feel like that would really count as an inferior officer. An independent counsel who's the head of no department feels very...
Wouldn't that be most inferior of all? Beholden to no man, commanding no soul.
That's very
philosophical. Sorry, I've been reading too much Shakespeare lately. Yes?
I have a question. So the independent counsel in the case is given the powers of the Attorney General, to conduct the investigation. So I'm confused how the court came to the decision that it's an inferior officer if they have that kind of power.
So effectively, he became the surrogate Attorney General for at least this case. And that's a valid point, except at the end of the day, he's still just a surrogate who's subject to being fired by the Attorney General. He has an odd combination of power and vulnerability. Now, keep in mind, this is a statute that no longer exists. The special prosecutor is different. The special prosecutor is created under other legal authorities and much more subject to the discretion of the Attorney General. So Mueller has even less protection in this circumstance, unless Congress passes this law we're talking about. Yes.
Is there a devil's advocate argument to be made?
There's always a devil's advocate argument to be made. That's why we're all here.
The administration making an argument that, because they kind of have this idea that, certain go out to get them, that Mueller's investigation is impeding their executive function because, there's a PNA involved in the cabinet, they're interfering with his ability to, conduct his day-to-day business, because it's always on the news, it's always being asked, it's always a part of the conversation. They can't get it because people are still worrying about the Russia investigation. I'm not saying it's the right part about this thing. I can see them saying, fake news is out here. How am I supposed to stop this from happening? Was I fired?
All right. If I ever say the words fake news in this class other than ironically, throw a water ball at me. I'm sorry. I hear what you're saying. Let me, unfortunately, I wish we had a whole other hour. This is a fascinating and important topic. It's one that's going to be hugely important over the next couple of months, I predict. What I would suggest to you is a couple of thoughts, part of which I will cravenly defer to the summary of our next class. I promise to give you the capsule perspective for Myers, for Humphrey, for Olson, and also the Account Oversight Board decision, where Justice Roberts basically said double layers of job protection were unconstitutional. I will just give you a couple of thoughts. Number one, this decision with Ted Olson was written at a point where the court seems to conclude that the appointment of an independent prosecutor is not going to impede the president's exercise of his core or her core executive functions. Would you say Ken Starr impeded the exercise of executive functions by President Clinton? Y'all do remember. I had this secret horror. I'll refer to something I think everyone knows, and I just, everyone will go, where did he come from? Okay? So, I would suggest to you that perhaps Olson might get a slightly different consideration in light of history and the lapsing of the independent prosecutor statute. But, second, when it comes to Mueller and the way that the law would be crafted, the real question is not whether that statute's unconstitutional. The question is, how would you write it so that it would be constitutional, but still protect Mueller? What sorts of things, given Myers, given Humphrey's executor, given Olson, would you make sure got inserted into that statute so that it would survive constitutional muster before this Supreme Court, or even more conservative Supreme Court in another year or two? Now, I promised as a parting gift to give you a bit of an update, which is the DC Circuit yesterday handed down a decision about the most beleaguered agency in the federal government, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. I assume you all may have heard about this, which is this is the only agency with two acting heads right now. The statute that created the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, specified, buried in its terms, limits on the ability of the president to fire the head of that agency. In addition, it set a process for which the person who heads that agency could be appointed by the director of the agency. In other words, the director can designate an acting successor. So, two separate issues. The one that's playing out right now with the two heads is that basically the outgoing head of the agency appointed his deputy to run the agency. And then President Trump, that same day, said, I'm appointing Mick Mulvaney to be the head of this agency. And the security guards escorted the deputy director out, not Mick Mulvaney. That's currently being litigated. The DC Circuit has already granted expedited consideration and is almost certain to go before the US Supreme Court. The second one, the second basket, is predating all this hullabaloo. The Consumer Finance Protection Bureau undertook an enforcement action against a lender and imposed an enormous penalty. And the lender responded by saying, you're unconstitutional. And as a result, they claimed that because the entire agency was under one person, that that made it unconstitutional, that that one person was subject to protections from being fired, and that the way it was structured, it gave the president too little control over the agency. Here's the key thing. Here's where Olson comes back. The DC Circuit said that is perfectly a legitimate exercise of congressional power. Congress can limit the way that an agency is run, including to just investing the power into one person, and it can also limit how that person can be fired. It took them 250 pages to do it, but bottom line, Congress still, clearly in the DC Circuit, has that confidence. So I just wanted to give you the hard copy so you have a chance to peruse it at your leisure. This just has a couple of keys. This is Landy Act. I'm not asking you to commit this case to memory. It's not going to be a multiple choice question on the final exam. I just want you to be aware that it's there. And I would also not be surprised if this case gets to the Supreme Court, maybe not as fast as the other one, but still it'll be there pretty quick. So with that, last chance. Questions, comments, thoughts, ideas. Yes? It'll be in more detail in the next class. We only got just to dig in slightly on that. Okay. Any others? All right. With that, have a fabulous weekend. We'll see everyone on Tuesday.